Show is on the air.
For years, there were forebodings, but did the powers that be pay enough attention?
We're on the eve of destruction.
And then it happened, gradually and suddenly.
We finally really did it. You maniacs! You blew it up!
The why and the wherefore of the destruction continues to be well documented, but the more pressing question now, of course, is... The answer to that existential question is not fully known, but what is known is that Beaver Nation carries on, speaking as one through it all.
Been in trouble, but I'm okay. Been through the ringer, but I'm okay.
We're strong enough to take it. We can make it.
And we have made it, at least one more time, to another edition of the Joe Beaver Show. On 1240 Joe Radio, KEJOAM.com, and 93.7 FM.
You know, it's interesting how that song kind of fades out. We fade in, we begin another show, and somehow the anthem is always apropos. There's not much else we can say or do. It's all right. I think we're going to make it. Okay, that's it. That's what it says. That's what they say, and that's what we're going with. That's our story, and we're stuck with it. As John, I've been watching him behind the scenes the last few minutes, completely unbeknownst to yours truly from this technical standpoint that he has to deal with, and from all of you who are kind enough to tune our way every day, I'm telling you that there are manifold issues behind the scenes that Glenn and others are working on, that John, to the very last second, to try to make sure that the open played and that we could come on together with, it's all right. I think we're going to make it, playing in the background as we begin another Joe Beaver Show. I'm just telling you, it wasn't easy. But here we are, and we're grateful to be here, and thank you for tuning our way. I know that that's neither here nor there for you. Just, is the show on or not? I mean, our patience level as listeners, I don't know about you, John, when I'm listening to other radio stations, and I do often, as you know, driving around, listening to stuff coming out of Portland, listening here and there, a second or two of dead air or a second or two of the usual formatic not being placed, I'll give it that, a second or two, but not much more.
No.
You know what I mean? We just move on to the next. Well, okay, I'll punch my next button in.
Yep.
So those of you that kind of hang with us through the machinations of a behind-the-scenes small town, small market, slightly understaffed in terms of, instead of having one full-time engineer dedicated to just our issues within the building, we've got people that rove and move and stop here on occasion and that type of thing. Thank you for hanging in with us. It's good to be with you today on the Joe Beaver Show, which will feature from the Innovative Law Group in Eugene, Alan Thayer at 11:30, and will feature a friend, a good friend of the show through the years, a friend beyond the show itself, somebody I've known and liked, admired her work. She's been a frequent guest over the years, but yesterday, one of the things that you pick up on occasion driving around, you learn some things, and I'm listening to a conversation yesterday at a radio station in Portland, namely John Canzano and his show, The Bald-Faced Truth. And I hear, when I hit that button on my radio dial and I hear a voice as an obvious guest of John's, I think, I know that voice. I know who this is. Lindsay Schnell's on with John Canzano. No big deal in that sense. She's a guest of his fairly often and has been a guest of ours over the years. Really enjoy her work and perspective. But when she finishes an answer, Canzano comes back in and doing his proper work as a talk show host, occasionally will remind you who the guest is. Romy does a great job of that. You don't just always assume and expect that everybody tuning your way is going to know any more than they're going to know the score of a game and an event when you tune in. You have to give it fairly frequently, and you never can really give it too much. Now, I say never really can. I qualify it a little bit because it is possible when program directors and bosses and people tell you, you can't give the score too much. You can't say the fan too much. Sports Radio 1520, the fan. We're the fan. You can't say the fan too much. Just know in your mind, you can't say it too much. So I heard that and laughed and went on a long the fan rant. And that's why even today, Roberto Nelson will say, I get on a bus on the way to sit down, on the way to Santa Clara or LMU or Pacific or wherever else. Roberto, hey, Doc. Welcome to the fan. You know, everything's on the fan just because he got a kick out of that years ago.
Do you explain to them
not really, but
why that
just
is?
Things are on the fan. Another one that I'm really pleased about is Dylan Regal, who's the director of video and on the staff and a great young man. Really, really like him a lot. We've had Mitch Thompson as well. Some really engaging people within that director of video department at Oregon State, and Mitch and I had many a conversation. Dylan's sort of in that seat almost literally now, two seats up, sometimes right in front of me. For whatever reason, he's gotten a kick out of one of my other affectations, which is simply, well, here we are in the old Sansoni. Now, the old Sansoni has nothing to do with Doug Blair's friend, Katie Sansoni. I don't even know where and necessarily why I started to refer to things and say, hey, hand me that Sansoni there. Or can you look at this? Can you fix this little Sansoni here? I mean, I just started to call things Sansoni, a little bit like calling you Doc and him Doc. And hey, Doc, how are you? What's going on? But Dylan now, he's just amused to no end by that. So I get on the bus and say, here comes Doc Parker. Welcome to the old Sansoni. And we walk into a gym. Here we are, Mike, back in the old Sansoni. I mean, he's saying it all the time, almost to the point, where'd you come up with that Sansoni nonsense? Come on, now, knock it off. So anyway, everything's always on the fan. Everything's always on the old Sansoni. But yesterday, listening to the old Sansoni driving around town, I hear a voice. And I say, oh, okay, I know that voice. That's our friend Lindsay. And then Canzano says, just as you can't give the score too often, I'm not really sure you can. You need to constantly sort of refresh if you have a guest on for a while. We're visiting with Alan Thayer of the Innovative Law Group. Yeah, we're talking to Dan Dickow, which we will tomorrow in the first hour. Dan will have the game on the CBS Sports Network tomorrow night. Dan Dickow, former Gonzaga Bulldog hero, our guest. He'll be working the game. Dan, you know, we move into and then continue the conversation. The theory that you can't say the fan too much, I thought I refuted when I began to refer to everything being on the fan. And somebody finally said, okay, you proved your point. You can say it too much. Okay, thank you. That's all I wanted. The idea you can never say the name of your guest too often, you probably can, or the score. Because if you said, John, or anybody doing a ball game, when people say you can't say the score too much, well, I'll test that theory by saying, the 1-1 pitched Mad Rule fouled away the count 1-2. The score is 1-0 Beavers. The score is 1-0 Beavers. The score is 1-0 Beavers. The Beavers lead 1-0. Now the 1-2 pitch to Madrigal hit Paula. You can say it too much. You can. Don't tell me I can't. I'll prove it to you. Watch this. The score is 1-1. The score is 1-1. The score is 1-1. So it's possible. Don't just give me this, you can, you can't, you can't do it too much, you can't say the fan too much. Yes, you can, and I'm about to prove it to you. Now, that all said, the point is well taken. The score, giving the score, it's got to be way up there in terms of numbers of things you say during a broadcast.
Well, the rule on the score, and if anybody breaks it, then that's not good. Okay. I would say something else. I would say something that I usually say with friends, but it probably wouldn't go over well on the radio.
What is the rule?
Well, it's pretty basic. It's pretty much common sense. Radio 101, play-by-play 101, which there are no classes for.
True.
You learn from a mentor. If you're coming out of a break, commercials done. Welcome back
to Gill Coliseum.
The score is.
Right.
If you're going to break, going to be right back right now. Beavers up 33-31 on the Beaver Sports Network from Learfield.
Right.
That rule should never be broken. Never, never, never. 100%.
I got you. Yeah.
And the reason why is because if you're an astute listener and you're frustrated by the particular play-by-play person, and, you know, it happens all the time.
Yes.
And there are some who just, they won't give the score when they really should. But you should be able to at least say, well, there's a break coming. There's going to be a timeout soon. I'll get the score then.
Right.
And there are many very high level play by play people who don't even do that.
Right.
And that's bad. That's wrong. I don't care how great they are and their personality is. If they do that, they lose me. They're done.
Mm-hmm.
You must give it when you go to break or when you come back because I'm expecting it then.
Yeah.
And maybe asking too much to get it every other time, but you should never go to break or come back from break and not give a score. Never, never, never.
I understand. And I think that is a good rule. That's it. When you say, I ask you, what is the rule? You tell me that. I don't disagree at all. The updating of a guest is important. And so Canzano says, we're talking to Lindsey Schnell of The Athletic. And then, okay, he moves on to the next question, which is fine because probably at the beginning of their conversation, which I didn't hear,
right.
John might have said, hey, our guest today is Lindsey Schnell. She's been a frequent guest through the years, but she's now Lindsey Schnell of The Athletic. Lindsey, congratulations. Right. How did it happen? How long have you been working for The Athletic?
So by the time you're listening, it's old news.
Yes, and so it's old news. And so John, but he did say Lindsey Schnell of The Athletic, and it's one of those moments in time where you're just driving along. The Athletic. I didn't know she'd gone to work for The Athletic. She's been a frequent guest of ours with The Oregonian, with USA Today, and now, good for her, with The Athletic. So I reached out to her and said, hey, I heard you with Canzano. You sounded great. The Athletic? ! Congratulations. When did that happen? She wrote back and said, this week. This is her first week on the job.
What's she covering?
Well, we'll find out together because, I had this show to get to and prepare for, and she will join us at 12:30. But she did add, I'm coming to the Gonzaga game tomorrow night on behalf, I assume, of The Athletic and covering it.
Yeah.
So we'll touch base with an Oregon State alumna, a friend, and Canzano even asked her a lot about Sabrina and about how Sabrina and they were going to win the national title before the COVID year, and it felt like unfinished business. What do you think of that? And Lindsey, bless her heart, said to him, well, John, you know you're talking to an Oregon State graduate here, don't you? In other words, he understandably wanted her to play along with, oh, weren't they great?
Yeah,
they were going to do it that year. And a lot of people think that, and they may have. And Sabrina might have won her. They may have. They were really good. But he wanted her to play along, like, isn't that sad? And, oh, isn't that a terrible thing that they didn't get that chance? And Lindsey's answer to him was, you know, you're talking to an Oregon State graduate. There was pride in that
That's
moment.
That's a great, great answer. That is a great answer. That's
and,
so funny.
And then she sort of agreed with him. Yeah, they probably were, but you know, don't get too carried away on me here. We'll take a break before we bring Alan Thayer on. Anything you'd like to jump in with today with respect to anything we're kicking around, anything with Alan in particular that you'd like us as you've been continuing to try to read articles, even if your taste for them wanes and fades. Like Jim Wilson, wake me when it's over. Tell who are we playing? Who's the next member of the league? How much money do we have to work with? Who's suing who, et cetera. Maybe you're tired of all that kind of stuff and just want to go to the Gonzaga game tomorrow night and keep following the teams that we are blessed to watch and enjoy. But if there are specific issues and questions that you've come up with respect to settlements and suits and all of those things that are always going on behind the scenes in our world, in particular the last couple of years, feel free to submit those or anything else you want to jump in with. We take a break. John continues his wizardry in the background, keeping the station and the show on the air. Thanks for joining us on the Joe Beaver Show.
This is Oregon State wide receiver Darius Clemens, and you're listening to the Joe Beaver Show on 1240 Joe Radio in 93.7 FM.
Every time they that Bill was done. Hopper rings.
No, and, that was done for free. Oh,
well, I know it was done for free in a sense, but it's all part of the...
Back in the day.
He came in here to record some spots for a sponsor.
Yeah.
And while here, we co-opted him.
Yeah.
Hey, can you do this? He didn't, bless his heart, say, well, yeah, and what give am me, I getting paid for that?
Give me $10.
No, he
there, you know, it's funny, though. There are things we used to ask for that they could start to do that.
Oh, I know.
And that's going to be weird if that ever happens.
Nice kid when he was here doing some recording with Loved Him. And he was very kind to sit there and do those, which was in addition to the stuff he was doing that he was getting paid for through the connections with Kyle and the collective and a sponsor, the way it's supposed to be done. It was a true nil deal.
Right.
But he was kind enough to do that while here and record those liners. Before we break and come back with Alan Thayer of the Innovative Law Group in Eugene, just to get sort of an update, I know things are kind of quiet, and John and I were even discussing during that message break for our fine sponsors. There was almost a sense of, Alan's been an incredible contributor to what we've been doing and going through together as a fan base for a couple of years, but the discussion we had was sort of, what are we most concerned and worried about now? And maybe even the submissions on the text line would be nil or non-existent, or at least paltry in terms of your types of issues and questions, because we feel as though things are just moving forward and we're just sort of waiting for the next team to be added. And once that happens, we're not too worried about who it's going to be, even geographically where it's located. Just let's get it done. Let's get it finished. Let's settle who we are and what we're going to be and move forward, get the media rights deal, et cetera. Well, there are other moving parts behind this, and the Mountain West request for the lawsuit from the Pac-12 to be dismissed was dismissed. The suit carries on, and that's good news for the Pac-12, which means the Pac-12 has some standing and ground that Alan will talk about as to why the suit can proceed and what it could mean potentially.
So the Pac-12 asked for it to be dismissed?
No, the Mountain West did. The Pac-12 sued about the applicability of poaching penalties.
Yeah.
And the Mountain West said, well, now you agreed a deal is a deal, and so this suit ought to be totally dismissed.
It
is good news that the judge said, no, the suit can proceed. The Pac-12 suit.
Oh, the Pac-12 suit can proceed.
Proceed. They didn't give the Mountain West request for dismissal of the suit.
This has merit. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's good news. And
that
Alan can explicate that a little bit and more.
Yeah.
Expansion efforts and so on. That's coming up here shortly. Lindsay Schnell and her story of her journey to The Athletic and what brings her to Corvallis tomorrow night. I think she's covering the game on a national basis for The Athletic, with Gonzaga coming to town. And I see the interesting articles coming up. Dylan Jacobs locally has a nice piece about this being the biggest game in a long time for Oregon State. And it feels in that sense, because it's Gonzaga, this power over the last quarter of a century that hasn't played the Beavers since 92, it's the biggest game in a long, long time for a lot of reasons, it being Gonzaga for one. Even though we've seen good teams come through here and seen the Beavers spring some great wins against Arizona and UCLA and Oregon and other teams that have come in, the Beavers have knocked off and Gill's rocked and rolled, and we've had court storming celebrations all of that. We've seen all of that in our Pac-10-12 era. But Gonzaga's in a different kind of group, in my view. For one, they're coming in from over 30 years ago, back into our building, having risen as a national power and a Northwest phenomenon, and we haven't played them since 92.
That's amazing.
So this is bigger than even than a UCLA or Arizona outfit and teams that you become familiar with year in and year out, and then you hope you have the wherewithal in certain years, and you've had it to beat them, have exciting upset wins, etc. Yes. But this one feels very big from the timing of the visit, from the importance of the game for the Beavers. Dylan, I thought, did a nice job in the Gazette Times today in kind of laying out that whole scenario for why the game is one of the biggest for Oregon State. The Beavers themselves have played really good basketball. We're heading into a new world where Gonzaga will be an ongoing and regular partner and competitor in our league. So I think it's a very significant game and first step in sort of the beginnings of what could be, I hope, a very sizzling and good Pacific Northwest rivalry.
Oh, I think it will be. And we've got them, as you say, going forward there in the league, which was a great get back then. Yeah.
So let's take a break. We'll come back with Alan Thayer. In the meantime, some tickets still remain. BeaverTickets.com, 1-800-GO-BEAVS. Hope you're planning on making an event for you and the fan base. How excited are you all about this one tomorrow night? We'll talk to Lindsay about her presence. She's written articles on the national level for The Athletic about the SEC and other conferences, and she's coming to Corvallis tomorrow night, her old stomping ground. She's an alumna, but she's coming to write about the game, presumably, for The Athletic. And we'll talk to her about that and more. Thanks for joining us today. Our good friend Alan Thayer coming up next on The Joe Beaver Show. We continue on The Joe Beaver Show. Mike Parker with John Warren. That was quite a moment. One of the things we talked about, I could barely croak it out as the promo constantly reminds. It's not only a promo that we play that Learfield sent out. It's on every pregame show on the Beaver Sports radio network.
The is it from Dino Tanner?
No, it's from Jordan Pope last year hitting a step-back three to beat Arizona, which was a big moment, an exciting moment in time and in life.
This one, there have been others.
There have been many others. Many others, actually, when you think about it. Stevie Thompson several different times. Dino Tanner, as you mentioned. Yeah, there have been others. However, sometimes context is what gives a particular game maybe a little more sizzle and import, in that last year's win over Arizona with Pope hitting the step-back three, a sweet, delightful, wonderful moment for a bunch of hardworking guys who had a great moment in the sun.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like it came within the context of this team building towards late momentum and a push into the NCAA tournament or something along those lines. It felt a little more isolated in nature, if that makes sense. Whereas I feel like tomorrow night's game, with the Beavers at 10-1 at home, Hank holding their own in the net rankings at 59, Gonzaga coming, a chance to make a pretty significant move if they play great basketball, play like they're capable of playing, and win, which I think is all on the table. I think that's possible tomorrow night. I'm excited about it.
Yes.
Then you, in a sense, Lee Corso, then you got something as he throws his index finger in the air.
Yeah.
I think then you feel like you're moving on and building into something that could be very compelling as the season goes. Now, a loss doesn't take all that away, but a win does.
It propels you into
a really kind of exciting, compelling position that would get a lot of attention for yourselves,
lots of possibilities,
fans, the nation, Lindsey Schnell in The Athletic, et cetera. Now, always full attention on the Beavers in all things, no matter what the records, no matter the scores of games and so on. This is a great Beaver through and through. And you know he has to be the founder of Beavers Behind Enemy Lines in Eugene, Alan Thayer. Great Oregon State alum and proprietor of the Innovative Law Group in Eugene. It's a pleasure to welcome Alan back to the Joe Beaver Show. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, good morning, Mike. It's cold in the valley today.
Yeah, it is. It's up. It's cold up here, too, as you might suspect. But I hear you told me earlier you're coming to the game tomorrow night. Before we even dive in again to some of the minutiae, some of the stuff that it's more than minutiae. It may look like it and appear like it, but it has import to the future of Oregon State athletics. We'll get into those matters in a moment. First things first, how excited are you to be coming to tomorrow night's game and what I just said about sort of the context of this one with the Beavers playing really well, compelling ball at home, and the chance that tomorrow night provides?
Oh, I think it's going to be a fantastic game, and I was so heartened to see reports yesterday that the game is a sellout or close to a sellout. Those players deserve a packed house, and I'll be there doing my part.
Good for you. Yeah, and you've seen Gill in its heyday. You've seen what it can be, what it has been. This is my feeling, Alan. My hope is that in the bull new world we're heading into, and we'll get into those matters in a moment, that a Gonzaga coming in as a national power, that these games and other teams, St. Mary's and others coming in, that Gill Coliseum can reverberate again like in the days of glory with the Beavers building something on their own too.
Oh, I sure hope so. I mean, tomorrow we have Gonzaga. Next week, I believe, we have Washington State. St. Mary's is going to be coming to Corvallis, and then we're going to play down there. There's a lot of basketball ahead, and I just love the way Coach has this team coming together and playing Beaver basketball.
Alan Thayer joining us. Alan, one quick thought, if you would know, when I said you've seen the Gill in its heyday and rocking and in really exciting times, what specifically are we talking about for you? The years that I guess are the seminal ones for you in terms of experiencing life at Gill and what the place and the team and the program can be all about. What occurs to you when I ask you that?
Well, I was at Oregon State from 77 to 81, and those were the heydays of Ralph Miller basketball, the 26-1 regular season, the number one ranking, the Orange Express, people leaving the Thursday game and setting up their camp on the ramp for the Saturday game just to be in line. Those were great, great times and a lot of fond memories from Gill Coliseum.
Were you ever part of the campers?
No. I had a friend who was in the band.
Okay.
And he played trombone. And the band members would get into the stadium or the Coliseum about, I don't know, 45 minutes, an hour before the start of the game. And Chris would come in wearing his band pants. Someone else would wear his band jacket. I carried his trombone case, and someone else carried the trombone. So we all got in.
Alan, I'm turning you in. What are the statute of limitations?
We're well past that, John, thankfully.
That's very creative on your guys' part, and well thought out and well done. We appreciate that. Alan,
well, and I'm sure my friend Chris included me just because he wanted his future lawyer present.
Hey, did you know then, were you, honestly, Alan, in a serious question, in your undergraduate days at Oregon State, did you have an eye towards law school?
Well, I'd thought about it, and a lot of people had suggested it, but it wasn't really the path that I was wanting. I really didn't want to have to go to more school, quite frankly. But graduating in 1981 at the beginning of the worst recession since the Great Depression, being born at the tail end of the baby boom generation, there just weren't jobs available. And it became really evident to me that it was a time to invest in myself and go to law school. And that's what launched the career path that I have taken.
And where did you go to law school?
Well, I couldn't go to law school at the University of Oregon, that was for sure. So I went to Lewis and Clark in Portland.
So was there any, being young and a sports fan, clearly it was all Beavers, but was there any pull? Do you have any interest in anything that's happened over the years at Lewis and Clark and their sports department?
Not really. The law school was very separate from the undergraduate campus. And the undergraduate campus being on the old Meyer estate was gorgeous, but the law school was kind of down the hill from the undergraduate campus, and the law school had previously been independent of Lewis and Clark and was located in downtown Portland. So there was a real division between the two. I know people who went to law school at University of Oregon, for example, which is integrated into the campus. And I think their relationship with sports there are a little different than at Lewis and Clark, although I like to see them do well. And
sure.
I certainly like their color scheme, although they say they're black and orange. They're not orange and black. But.
Well, Jay Losey's done a great job there. as the football
yes,
coach.
Yes, he has.
Yeah.
We're visiting with Alan Thayer, Innovative Law Group in Eugene. Alan, thank you for touching on those things. Let's jump into sort of the latest, whatever it may be. John and I both, we don't know if it's back issues, fatigue, or you know, issues going on that are the whole Jim Wilson doctrine of just kind of tell me when it's over and who we're going to play and where. And all. I get that. But every news story that either Wilner or Canzano puts out has some relevance to our world and our future as to whom we're going to play and what kind of level we're going to be playing at. Correct, Alan? So we can't I know in your world you don't ignore each story as it comes out and wait for finality and conclusion. We're moving maybe towards something like that. But what about the latest that has occurred to you as you read Canzano, Wilner, et cetera?
Well, the first thing I did was go and read the actual court filing. You want me to summarize
yes.
where we are and what's going on?
Please.
People may have
exactly.
lawsuit.
Exactly. Yes. Where are we now? What's the latest? With the action taken by the court saying, no, we're going to let the lawsuit proceed, et cetera. Maybe if you can just kind of give us the nutshell version of where we are now, what happens next, perhaps.
Okay. So the Pac-12, which at the time was Oregon State, Washington State, they had to have a scheduling agreement. They entered into a scheduling agreement with the Mountain West, and that scheduling agreement had a poaching penalty of $10 million plus per school that leaves the Mountain West and joins the Pac-12. So the Pac-12 has filed a lawsuit against the Mountain West, trying to challenge those poaching penalties on antitrust grounds, on the grounds of a California statute, and on contract grounds. And we've talked about this contract principle many times. So they filed, the Pac-12 files its complaint. The Mountain West had a period of time to respond, and they can respond either with an answer that says, we admit this, we deny that, and we allege these additional things, or they can move to dismiss. And that's what they opted to do, was a motion to dismiss. And so you read their motion, and, well, it seems colorable. They seem like they have some arguments. But then the Pac-12 had a chance to respond. And that's where we are right now. The judge will make a ruling. They may schedule oral argument. They will make a ruling. But kind of a spoiler alert, I totally expect that the judge will motion to dismiss and the lawsuit will proceed.
Alan, if you would, could you go back and recap for us why we shouldn't be upset with our own side by saying, you signed something, why are you trying to weasel out of it? And I know we talked about this before a long time ago, and you had reasons for it. Could you just reiterate those reasons?
People are free to enter into contracts, but you can't enter into illegal contracts. And so in this instance, the Mountain West was holding all the cards. If they wouldn't enter into an agreement with Oregon State and Washington State, and our universities had no one to play this season just passed, it'd be the end of those programs. So there was tremendous pressure on Oregon State, Washington State, and therefore the Pac-12. If they were to continue, they had to play somebody. And they said, fine, we will play you. We will charge you a lot more than we've ever charged you before to play any of our schools. And we will add this poaching penalty as well.
Okay, now, does that argument, in your estimation, is it strong enough? Is that, in other words, the gun to the head theory, is that a true, they were absolutely had no choice that a judge, and I know it's all speculation, but what is that something you would go, yeah, from precedent, that's like a gun to the head?
Well, you don't even get to that argument. That is, did you enter into an agreement where one side wants to enforce a provision that is illegal? Mm. So the perfect example, and this is back in days past when gambling was illegal, there's been a lot of erosion on that. But if you had a gambling debt, you could not enforce a gambling debt in the courts because gambling is illegal.
Interesting.
Does
knowledge matter? Does knowledge
so
of it?
Here, the illegal conduct or the unenforceable provisions are violations of antitrust law, violations of a California business statute, and violations of contract law, which say you can't, that although we will enforce contracts, but we will not enforce penalties imposed by a contract. Mm-hmm. Every party has the right to breach a contract. They may be liable for damages caused by their breach, but you can't add a penalty on top that says, if you violate this, then we're going to charge you trainloads of money.
Okay.
Interesting.
Okay, so the merit of the conference's suit, and I remember even back then we puzzled over, there seemed to be this tacit understanding that the poaching penalties were not enforceable, and yet we're going to write them in anyway. Remember that kind of conversation, Alan?
We had that conversation when we very first reviewed the Mountain West scheduling agreement. Absolutely. I highlighted that back then.
Okay. Yeah.
And it feels like, in a sense, what the conference is saying is coming back to that. Look, these poaching penalties were, as you say, illegal. They were not, they're not properly legal contract under contract law or whatever else. These are not enforceable. They're not legal. Yeah, but you agreed to them. Well, did they? I mean, is the conference in signing their name, does that mean that thus they are bound to pay illegal penalties?
Yeah, I mean, someone could agree to work for $1.50 an hour.
Okay. Yes.
But is that legal? No.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense.
They signed it.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any difference.
Question from a listener. If the poaching fees stick, would we have been better off just to merge with the Mountain West and argue to keep the Pac-12 name?
Well, actually, if they had stuck, what it probably would have been better is to pick the top 7 schools out of the Mountain West.
Right.
You didn't need everybody, but you needed 7 in order to disband the conference.
Do you feel as though John keeps coming back, Canzano, and I give John and Wilner, both Johns, the Wilner and Canzano lives, great credit. They've stayed on this and beaten the drum consistently and followed these issues and tried to flesh them out for all of us. I give them credit for it. For the most part, does it seem to you, Alan, that Canzano's been on, for the most part, the right track? You hinted to John and I in a text, there may be something amiss here that he wrote recently. So what can you say about that and sort of the reporting of all of this stuff that we're kicking around now as it relates to the future expansion of the conference and the war chest settlements, et cetera?
So John, in his article, near the end of his most recent article, talked about, okay, there's this 2-year time limit to get to 8 all sports members of the conference. Excuse me, I have a little something caught in my throat. But that perhaps the Pac-12 could ask the NCAA for an extension. Well, my concern when I read that was, well, wait a minute, there's also a similar provision in the settlement agreement between Oregon State, Washington State, and the other 10 former members. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to go back and look at that to see if that would prevent a request for an extension. Now, I'm not advocating for an extension. I don't think an extension is going to happen. But the way the settlement agreement is written, I think that if they were to do so, they could do that under the settlement agreement.
Okay, and not lose what they've already been awarded in the settlement by asking for an extension. Thus, that would open that back up again. You don't think that they're susceptible to that possibility then?
Well, they need to be aware of it, and they need to do some things, but I think it would be fine.
From a listener,
so when I wrote you, it was before I went back to the settlement agreement. So
okay,
I had that concern.
Sure.
But it's not really an
issue. Gotcha. I appreciate it. What do you got, John?
Alan, Alan, from a listener, and I'll try and surmise it the best I can. Essentially, are we done with any collusion or antitrust issues?
No, I don't think so. And I think there's a lot of stuff coming in college athletics that antitrust is going to continue to be an issue. Strategically, I think this lawsuit against the Mountain West is good because it shows that Oregon State has antitrust chops, mm-hmm. and they're not afraid to use them. At another level, I mean, it's terrible that the SEC and the Big Ten now have the Mountain West and the remnants of the Pac-12 fighting each other. But we have shown that we're not afraid to bring an antitrust suit. We have very good antitrust lawyers. And I think that gives us some leverage in everything that's coming down in the future. But an antitrust suit is... still a very real possibility, but it's one you got to play at the right time with mm-hmm. the right facts mm-hmm. against the right defendant, and then maybe you can make something happen.
Alan Thayer, Innovative Law Group, our guest on the Joe Beaver Show. Alan, when you say everything coming down the pike in the future, does that mean everything in terms of the Beavers with this little bit of perhaps a little bit of leverage and the antitrust chops, as you say, how might that affect in your view? Expansion, a media rights deal, inclusion in a super conference world. When you say everything, are you talking about all those kinds of things?
I am. And don't forget, the college football playoff is due to be renegotiated in another year. Mm-hmm. And the SEC and Big Ten are making noise like they pretty much want to control that sucker.
Yes. Hmm. Yes. But here's this these little two left in the Pac-12 that are in the process of rebuilding. And by 26, when that gets negotiated again, you think part of that could be, hey, look, you know what we're sitting on here. You give us an automatic seat in the conference table, period. The Pac-12 is a Power 5 player with a seat at the table. I mean, do you think it comes to that maybe, perhaps?
Yeah, it's like, hey, you guys do this, or we let our antitrust attorneys lose.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
Because if they didn't have that, there would be no chance in hell that the Beavers and Cougars, whatever the Pac-12 as it will be, would ever get a seat at that table.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah. That's possible. So a big problem for the SEC and the Big Ten is that together they control just a fraction under 60% of the college football TV market. One or two of their schools are playing in those games based upon viewership mm-hmm. and dollar value and other measures. So at 60%, in terms of antitrust scrutiny, that can create a lot of problems for them. Hmm. And I think by now they have figured that out before they started to form an association between the two of them to study the future of college sports. I think someone warned them about that 60% figure, and they did not move forward with that. But they still are making a lot of noise with the college football playoff. Either you give us what we want, or we'll form our own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And antitrust and collusion and all those sorts of issues will be dusted off when it comes time for that.
All right, I got one last question. We got about 2 minutes. Yesterday, coaches unanimously voted to essentially cut down the portal windows from 2 to 1 and 10 days in a certain time period. Do you see any kind of a
pushback
from or legality where they say you're keeping us from making money or whatever? Because as one astute analyst said during the bowl season, you know, the craziness is happening. People are trying to make rules, but it gets sued and the suits win. What about this particular suit? Got about a minute and a half.
Is this part of the house settlement?
No, it's just that now that we have two big portal windows, they're trying to clean it up so that the bowl games will have merit and that players will stick around for the bowl games. So get rid of the fall window, move it to January, and then only have one window instead of a spring window, just one window in January.
Coaches have voted unanimously to this effect.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there will definitely be attorneys willing to work on contingent fees to take that case.
Yes.
But it's, that probably would be analyzed under a rule of reason argument. If so, then is that a reasonable restraint of trade in order to protect the value of the product?
Yeah. We're out of time.
Hey,
Alan.
Let's, as always, there's always a lot of other questions and things to deal with, which we'll continue to do. So thank you for your time, as always. Please come by and say hello tomorrow night at Gill Coliseum. Thanks for joining us. We've got an hour to go.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Welcome back to another day in the life of the Joe Beaver Show with Mike Parker, whose name brings instant recognition.
It's a Mr. Parker.
Who?
Mr. Parker.
Who?
30, 25, 20, Ken!
I'm pretty busy right now, Mr. Parker.
Yes. Beavers!
Mm-hmm. Now, Mr. Parker, now, just calm yourself. Again. Goodbye.
I'm excitable. Yeah.
Mr. Parker is not alone, of course.
Hey, yeah. Which way did the other fella go?
The other fella.
You wait right here. I'll go get Warren.
John Warren, the most humble man in sports.
Oh, yes. I helped write the game.
No.
Oh, toured the world, giving lessons and also lecturing.
This is good. This is real good. I'm really proud of our team.
And the Joe Beaver Show always seeks fellowship.
Is there a doctor on the stands? Why, yes, I'm a doctor. How do you like the game, Doc?
So, here living the Doc life are Mike Parker and John Warren with the Joe Beaver Show on 1240 Joe Radio.
Is going to be skinned, he says.
I don't think you can do that.
No.
I really don't think you can.
We head into the second hour. Lindsey Schnell at 12:30 of The Athletic. Mike Parker with John Warren. Open phones now and texts. Our thanks to Alan Thayer of Innovative Law Group for joining us. Sometimes you think, well, we've touched this, we've covered this, but every time he shares something, something new pops up or something as a way of reminding us, oh, here's what you said back then, it still holds, what do you think now, et cetera. The one thing I wanted to ask him near the end, we ran out of time, but my assumption is I know the answer, and that's why I would ask. I remember Richie McKay one time, I've shared this before, but this is how we are in the world that we live in. As in-house guys, and we are, and those that take a dim view of who we are and what we do because we're in-house paid-for guys. Yes. Yes, we are. I mean, it is true. But I hope not to the utter, complete, ridiculous point that that anything we ever say is thus completely diffused with that spirit, and therefore you can't trust anything. I hope we're a little bit better than that. We may not be. I'll admit that. But, you know, one of the things that Richie said to me once when I asked one of his players, I think it was Jimmy Haywood, I asked him a question that had the ability for the answer to go one way or the other. I mean, it was sort of like, you know, your thoughts about coming to Oregon State and staying here after a coaching transition. You know, how's that all, Eddie Payne to Richie? How's that all going for you?
And you're setting him up to say, he's been great.
I love it here. I'm so glad I stayed. But I didn't know exactly what he was going to say, but Richie happened to be standing by and was on hand. And so the interview's over. This might have been after a shoot around or a pregame interview, or Richie was getting, I was getting ready to talk to Richie. I can't remember. But Richie sat down with me and asked me when Jimmy wandered away. Richie says, Mike, did you know what he was going to answer when you asked him that question? And I had to say, well, Richie, no, I didn't. It was a genuine question. And he goes, well, you got to be a little careful with stuff like that. I mean, which was his way of saying he may have thrown me the program. You don't know what he's going to do.
Yeah.
So you better have a pretty good feel for what he's going to say. Yeah. I get that from, again, an in-house paid employee standpoint, all of that. But I also didn't feel too bad about the nature of the question I asked.
Did he answer correctly?
Well, what is the correct answer?
Oh, I love it here.
I love it here. I'm glad I stayed. I kind of, having tracked with him through the interview up to that point, I kind of knew that because he was talking about hanging in and persevering and learning life lessons and through tough times you get better. So that my sort of culmination in all of that was, so all of that said, are you kind of glad you chose to stay rather than transfer out when the coaching change occurred?
You know.
And he did answer it, quote unquote, correctly in that he said the right thing, played the game, even if he didn't really feel that way. And as it turned out, he and Richie had some real issues against one another.
And that's probably why Richie
and
then said that.
And Richie knew that, and they came to a head later in the year. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting because even though we're supposed to play the game, in order to keep things high integrity, it should never be challenged. In other words, a coach should not have said that to you.
Probably not.
Number one, because of course you're going to do the right thing. Number two, I don't know if he knew this at this time, but even though that was earlier in your career here, it was late in your career, and you're one of the best interviewers on the planet and would never do anything that's going to compromise anything. And you probably, you know, he could have taken the other way, but your feel for it was that he was going to go the right way.
Yes, yes, yes.
And because I've been, you know, you and I, I've done thousands of interviews over the years. And most of the time you do know what the answer is going to be.
Right.
It makes it boring for us.
Kind of.
But at the same time, and I like what we do on this show, is we get in, we ask him more stuff. It's not just about X's and O's. And feed off of the actual interview to then go, oh, well, that's interesting. I wouldn't have asked that had I written it down. But based on what they just said, let's follow that thread. And then we do. No one ever wants to bury anybody, much less bury the program that we work for. You more so than me, but I still do. So absolutely not.
Yeah.
But coaches or administrators, they shouldn't say that because you know who did a fantastic job? One of the absolute best in our scenario was Steve Fink.
Yes.
Steve knew that he needed to protect the brand, and he knew that you work, and me too, but mostly you, work with them and do your thing. But he also would say, not routinely, but enough, he'd say, well, you guys can do whatever you want. It's your show.
Right. I'm just telling you that this guy that leans this way. And so if you have him on, just know that's
careful.
A possibility.
Right, right. And Steve, absolutely the best at being on the other side and understanding the nature of what we do. Because he trusted us. He knew you. I keep saying
it's
mostly you. But there isn't going to be any trickery. We're not going after anybody.
Watch what I do to this
guy. Yeah, right, right. Like who were the kids that they had?
Dick Vitale
on.
They just ruined a relationship and a bridge. Dickie V was kind enough to go on with them. And those two young guys in a moment in time where they hoped they could make a name for themselves. Boy, they sure did.
Yeah.
But they burned a bridge with Dickie forever.
Yeah, and you know, you come across salespeople that way too, whatever the industry is. But in radio, it's rare, but you come across guys that will just lie, cheat, and steal to get one sale. And you tell them, you know, they're never coming back. Well, that's okay. I'm just going to get them now. Oh, well, good for you. I guess you're going to work your way through every business in town then.
You don't sell one car. You sell a guy five cars in a lifetime.
Exactly.
Or whatever. Something, the principle, the idea behind building a relationship. And Dougie, in our house, in our world here, has been just a beautiful, perfect example of what we're talking about. The long time, long ranging relationship sales oriented approach, rather than you got sign here now, this deal won't last much longer, we're selling these commercials as and to get that rate, here you go, sign, okay, hey, walk in, I got the contract, little bit, you know, it's
and
a
then
little,
under deliver,
it's a little different, exactly, a little different than Al Pacino and the whole Glengarry Glen Ross is incredible on so many levels, but when he makes the sale to Jonathan Pryce in the Chinese food restaurant bar, working him all night long, working him strategically and skillfully and getting him to sign to buy this Glengarry Glen Ross property deal. It's an incredible bit of work on his part in terms of the salesmanship involved, the kind of lying and conning and deceiving and skillfulness used to get him, to get that guy to sign the contract. And the scene cuts to him walking in. Okay, take the contest is over. I just won the Cadillac Eldorado. I got the contract here, which told you that everything that he was engaged in the restaurant across the street during the night was just a bunch of crap.
Just a big lie
to get that sale in that moment to win himself the Cadillac Eldorado.
And nothing in the future.
No, and that's what the beauty of that movie is the human condition in its, to me, about its worst form. I mean, you watch it to say, okay, this is how not to live as a human being.
Yeah, right.
Just about every character. Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour. Here's my question to you.
Yes.
Before we visit, sometimes people will say, well, I hear that. And you sometimes hear somebody say they heard something and you believe it or you go with it. So the other day, somebody says to me, he says, yeah, I saw Mick Cronin was complaining about travel the other day. How rich is that? Something to that effect. Well, the person who said that to me on our last basketball road trip, I trust enough to kind of believe that. But when I pressed, well, where did you see that? Oh, I don't know. I heard him say, without chapter and verse, without who he said it to, without the article, it's been a little difficult for me to simply say Cronin, amongst other things, is complaining about travel. The other things, hilarious in nature, in the sense of the poor dude talking about, I have more energy than anybody. Nobody cares more than I do. Those players, part of you almost looks at him and says, that's what every coach in America would like to say sometimes about their teams.
Yeah, he's had a string of headlines that kind of depict a meltdown.
Yeah, but when I've run that by Wayne, who's competed against Mick, and they kind of like each other, Wayne says, Mick's good for that once or twice every year, every season. So it's not like anything particularly new, except now the new world is the Big Ten for the head coach at UCLA. However, I did finally come across some specifics beyond just the, I have more energy than anybody in that room, and that's the problem. I care more.
Including my assistants,
my players. I have more energy than anybody. I mean, you know, as Seth Greenberg and Jay Billis and others were bringing up, Jay Williams on the College Basketball Game Day show, were saying the problem with all of that is it's not we, not we as a team, or even working that out behind closed doors with Tyler Bilodeau and company. It's I this, I that, I'm, and that in a long run does not necessarily foster esprit de corps. Okay, now, here I see in Yahoo Sports the following. I mean, Cronin almost makes you laugh. It's fairly on the sleeve, you know, wearing everything out there. Yeah. Part of you almost is,
It didn't seem like he was always in the news like this before.
Well, he's kind of been known as a hard coach, tough on his teams, and willing to browbeat them when necessary, but it always felt like there was a strategy behind it.
I never knew that.
3 days after ripping his team, this is how the article begins. 3 days after ripping his team following a home loss to Michigan, UCLA coach Mick Cronin turned his disdain toward the officials. Okay, in defense of my guys, he said, I didn't think we were given any chance to win in the second half. I let Jeff Anderson know. I hit the showers, Anderson being an official. Cronin's outburst came with UCLA down 9 after Maryland. He was given 2 quick technicals and sent on his way. Quote, here's Cronin. I don't remember the last time I had a technical. I'd had enough. I'm sending a message. I'm tired of it. I know we're the outsider and all that, us, SC, Oregon, but that was ridiculous. And take nothing away from Maryland, a really good team at home, but you got to defend my players. If you can just mug guys and chop their arms off, throw them out of the way, it's hard to run any offense, quote unquote. That comes from Mick Cronin. His teams are very physical. And,
Yeah, they are.
The technical fouls led to a 6-point possession for Maryland, 9-15, and then the game devolved into a rout. So he goes on. He goes on to, the article continues. This is UCLA's first season in the Big Ten, Yahoo writes, along with USC, Oregon, and Washington. Difficult travel was a given when those teams joined, and the Bruins are dealing with it now. They played at Nebraska on January 4th, returned home for 1 game with Michigan, then headed out for a trip to Maryland and Rutgers.
Oh.
So now here's Cronin. Now see, you say, oh, it's the reality hitting, you know. And here's what Cronin says, quote, we had to travel on a 5-hour and 50-minute flight. They got home Sunday. They had 2 extra days. Now Rutgers is sitting at home, and they got an extra day. I haven't mapped all this out, but I sure hope it swings our way at some point, unquote. After returning from Rutgers, UCLA will play 7 straight games out west. Okay, so they've got a stretch coming, and that begins, in fact, this weekend. I get it, says Cronin. It's probably virtually impossible to make the schedule, but I just know it hasn't been good for us, Cronin said. Michigan was in L.A. 3 days before we were. And then he talks about the realities, unfortunately, of the terrible wildfire situation in the Southland. Quote, my house is getting real close to being evacuated. When I got thrown out, I just went immediately to my phone, quote unquote.
Wow.
So that is just one story about the new world that UCLA finds itself in. But it's not isolated. He cites the exact time of the flight, 5 hours and 50 minutes. He talks about the number of days and hours and time and the disparities in the travel. Anybody out there in our midst at all? Oh, that's too bad. How do you feel about hearing all of that, Beaver Nation?
Absolute joy. I feel bad for him and his program. I doubt he was on any shaking his
banging fist the drum to go to the Big Ten and the Pac-12.
Right. So for some of them, I feel bad for him. For others, I don't. And, you know, Chip Kelly, when he was still at UCLA, was saying, look, just have football do this and keep the other sports
the integrity
together.
of the geography, yes.
So we haven't really, and we've tried, but it's kind of a futile effort to come up with the exact who to blame. I think it's Fox and ESPN, essentially, and then Oregon and Washington. I know Dave from Tumwater has said that it's Washington, and there's a lot of truth to everything.
USC, UCLA.
Well, USC, UCLA years before, right?
2 years
before. In fact, even before that, when they said no to
the expansion, and then they get themselves out anyway when there was a chance for the conference to make itself whole years ago.
Right, and then the further back you go, the more you get to Texas having its own network, the Big Ten having its own network, and then USC and UCLA, they've always wanted more. Mm-hmm. They didn't want revenue sharing years and years and years ago for in our league.
But it's also possible while we point fingers at USC and say their fingerprints are all over the demise and it's quote-unquote their fault. On the other hand, as Scott Barnes has said, when we were – still trying to, you know, whatever was going to happen with our conference after SC and UCLA left and Oregon and Washington left. I mean, Scott talked about uneven revenue distribution in terms of making sure your powers players in big markets, SC, UCLA, Washington, what are made whole, or they get a bigger chunk, they get a bigger share. It's something that the conference never really addressed with respect to trying to keep USC and UCLA when they knew there was a lot more money to be had than they were getting in the Pac-12 model.
Which would then take you to another branch of who to blame, and that is the old commissioners.
Yeah, the presidents and chancellors and so on, with it, and the commissioners of our league. Yes, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, we all want to blame when bad things happen. It's human nature, and so we just haven't come to a consensus. There are different slices of the pie on who to blame. And and for some reason, I don't blame UCLA basketball. But I've been noticing that they're not doing well. They're getting run by team after team after team.
And they beat Gonzaga.
And Arizona is not even in the top 25. I mean, when is the last time that happened?
I know.
Now, I don't know if that has to do with being in the Big 12 or anything. I don't think so, because that's not a huge change for the Big 12 teams that left the Pac-12. They're, you know, geographically,
it's a good stamp. Yeah, I haven't quite figured out. I haven't followed Arizona's issues very well. I've seen, I will say this, with, and we'll talk coming up here shortly with Lindsey Schnell of The Athletic about tomorrow night's game and maybe even her own feel and knowledge for the current Gonzaga team. The point guard for Gonzaga, Ryan Nemhard, is as good of a pure passing point guard as I've seen in a long, long time, Johnny. I look forward to talking to Dan Dickow about it tomorrow.
What's 39 into?
About 9.4.
9.4
assists per game. 9.4 assists per game. And the turnover number is really low, as somebody pointed that to us yesterday. I can't remember whom. Withers, maybe.
Gonzaga as a team averages 18 assists. Half of those are from him. 18 assists a game, and if you're shooting 36 shots a game, that's 50, half of your made baskets are coming off of teamwork.
Cronin said in preparing to play Gonzaga, and UCLA did beat Gonzaga when things were going better for him, but UCLA, Cronin said that Gonzaga's cutting, they're cutting and moving away from the basketball, was as good as any he's ever coached against.
See, that's what kills teams. And I would love to see, you know, the Beavers do more of that. Just cut, move, pass, and go, because passing lanes are always open. You just have to have patience.
And Wayne, and when the Beavers are at their best, they're doing that, and the ball's moving quickly inside and outside. Yeah. It doesn't get stagnant. You don't have over-dribbling. Gonzaga's never guilty of that, really. But the guy that runs the show, John, Ryan Nemhard, you're getting carried away if you're about to mention the name I think you're going to mention. Well, yeah, I'm going to mention it, because he reminds me of him a little bit with the sheer strength and court vision of the passes. In the early 90s, there was an article written in the, I think it might have been Jake Curtis in the San Francisco Chronicle or one of the writers in the Bay Area, back when college basketball was bigger to them and Cal and Stanford basketball. The writer of the article might have been Glenn Dickey, even the famed sports columnist, who said, those who are fretting over the state of college basketball or the parlous nature of things in the Golden Bear program, fret no longer. Jason Kidd is coming. You know, and that was the upshot of it, that this Jason Kidd is going to revolutionize the point guard position. He's going to be the next Magic Johnson. I mean, that he is as good as we've seen at point guard at the position and in the sport in a long, long time. Now, I thought Kidd was outstanding in watching him play in the Pac-10. Yes.
Yeah.
And he was very good in the NBA, but I think he fell a little bit short about revolutionizing the position or being, quote-unquote, as good of a point guard ever.
Yeah.
He was very good. Some of his passing, John, I will say this, his passing and his vision was incredible. And I think Ryan Nemhard is the first guy I've seen coming into Gill tomorrow night. And just watch him at work, folks. I'm hoping the Beavers disrupt him, make him have issues with passing lanes and vision, and find ways to be disruptive. And I hope they will enough to get him off his game a little bit. But watch him, folks, tomorrow night at Gill and in person. And then please report back on Friday what you think. Because I've seen a couple of almost full Gonzaga games that I've recorded and watched in anticipation of the Beavers getting ready to play the Zags tomorrow night. And some of the passes he makes, I go, whoo! Yeah, I honestly just go, whoo! The speed, the velocity, the accuracy, hitting ahead, finding little narrow windows to drill a ball through to get the guy to get the ball in the exact position of the cutter. It's good stuff. Really good stuff. So I look forward, just from a basketball aesthetic standpoint, sure, to watching him at work person tomorrow night.
I can't wait. Just a little note on things that we've discussed already. Brooks texted. There's an article in the paper today. This is a late edition because I didn't see it this morning. On Oregon women's basketball and Kelly Graves, essentially complaining about travel. So even though it's intermixed and it's a little bit of a complaint, we're seeing the theme pop up more and more with all the different teams.
And that's, I don't think there's anything terribly surprising. I don't think anyone's come down on the side of, you know, this whole travel thing hasn't been nearly as bad as we thought it was going to be. Right. It doesn't feel to be going that way.
No.
It feels to be the inevitable pushback against it. What does that lead to or mean a couple of years from now,
right,
6 or 7 years from now? I don't know, but maybe it could mean a move back towards geographical integrity and being back to the West.
That's what we hope.
Yeah.
I think by highlighting it and by talking about it, there's two things that we get out of it, whether it's right or not. One is, ha ha, look what you did. You deserve it. This is what you wanted. I think all of us have a little bit of that in us. And then second, ooh, if there's a lot of it and it's loud enough, maybe a change will be made.
Let's take a break and come back with Lindsey Schnell of The Athletic on these and other matters. We thank you for joining us today on The Joe Beaver Show.
All right, we've got Lindsey Schnell coming up here in just a moment. We're trying to do the connect part of the whole thing. So Mike stepped out. Will Heck will join us tomorrow. We'll talk with Oregon State's newest tight ends coach. And, of course, Will being a kid from right here in Corvallis. In fact, went to school with my son and Mike's daughter. So we know Will. And, of course, Hadley Heck, we talked with her about marketing not long ago during the football season. So Will Heck will join us tomorrow. We also have Dan Dickow, who will join us. And Dan, of course, way back in kind of that early run of Gonzaga, when Gonzaga was starting to make a name for itself, and boy, he was tremendous. Some great, great players have come through the Pacific Northwest and those Mark Few teams. In fact, Step, the kid from South Eugene, was a great point guard up there. Brian Michelson, who's on the staff now with Mark Few, I remember calling his games when he was at Jesuit High School back in the 90s. Brian Michelson was a tremendous player. And so Dan Dickow tomorrow.
Dan Dickow and Will Heck tomorrow. We are trying to make contact with Lindsey Schnell of The Athletic. I believe we may have her on the line now. Do we? Is that Lindsey? Thank you. Sorry about that, Lindsey. Our paths have crossed again, but wires crossed there for a moment. It is a pleasure to welcome a friend through quite a few years now at Oregon State and beyond. But it was one of those moments yesterday, not quite as shocking as the day I was wandering around in my living room and heard Rich Ackerman on a national sports update, you know, go through the typical 4 or 5 NFL stories and then say, and a note in college football, Mike Riley is a new head coach at the University of Nebraska. And it was just one of those in the middle of the stop, look at the radio and say, what? Because I hadn't heard anything about that. And here's Rich Ackerman saying, now, it wasn't as stunning to me yesterday as I'm driving along and I hear John Canzano say, we're talking to Lindsey Schnell of The Athletic. Lindsey, da-da-da-da-da. What? The Athletic? I didn't pull over. I didn't stop traffic. It wasn't quite Rich Ackerman, Mike Riley in that respect. But it was a surprise to me. I continued to listen to the conversation with much enjoyment, as always. And so, Lindsay, it prompted me to reach out to you to congratulate you and ask you if you could come out and share some of your thoughts with us. So congratulations. I love The Athletic. It's my favorite sports website in the world, and you're part of it now. Congratulations. How did it all come about?
Well, thank you so much, Mike. First of all, you would appreciate, as a baseball guy, that one of my buddies who is a professional baseball scout, when he heard about it, he said, "Man, you're getting called up to the show," which is, you know, right, a joke that only a few people understand. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's been like a whirlwind. I interviewed for the job back in July, right when I got home from the Olympics. I had a great role at USA Today, and I was really happy. I just was really excited at the prospect of working with some of my closest friends in the business, in Bruce Feldman and Stuart Mandel. And I think that The Athletic, I mean, you said it, like, they set the standard within sports journalism, and I want to be part of that.
Well,
so
yeah,
really exciting. Got the offer right around Thanksgiving. But then I couldn't tell anyone for a while, so I did a lot of silent celebratory shopping. but now it's official. It's my third day, and I'm all in.
Congratulations, Lindsay. That is so such good news and well-deserved, and to me it is indeed the class of sports journalism in the era we live in. And you tell me a little bit, if you would, what does the role entail now for you?
So I'm a senior writer covering colleges, primarily men's college basketball, which obviously I have experience covering. I used to cover men's college basketball at Sports Illustrated, and when I first started at USA Today, the last few years I have been doing, you know, 95% women's basketball. So this is now going to be a flip and be mostly men's, but I'm sure there will be an opportunity to cross over into other sports, including women's basketball, including football. And of course, you know, we're in Oregon State country, so I'm sure that there's going to be some baseball. The baseball editor reached out to me and was like, "Hey, I've been reading you since Oregon State played at Vanderbilt in that super regional years ago." And I was like, "Oh, I remember that night." And so does Sammy Capiglio, who did not throw well. I'm sure you remember that night too.
Oh, I do. Yes, yes.
So, but yeah, focus on colleges. I'm also really excited to potentially explore like the in-between space as guys are getting ready to jump from college basketball to the NBA. I think there's a lot of interesting stories there. And as we know too well, as Oregon State people and as Pac-12 people, you know, the landscape of college sports is shifting so dramatically every day. So who knows what I might be covering in a month?
Well, Lindsay,
NCAA.
What you did share with me, I think, is exciting in that it comes under your purview now, your new duties working for The Athletic. But you're coming to Gill tomorrow night. That's a nice juxtaposition of events, right?
100%. I'm excited. I mean, you know, that's always like the last couple of years, I haven't watched a ton of men's basketball, but I watch the Beavers a fair amount and I always watch the Zags. So now I get to watch them against each other. And I know it's going to be a sellout, crazy environment. So fingers crossed for a great game.
And you're coming to cover it, correct? I mean, it's not just like, oh, there's a nice little game down the road. I mean, this Gonzaga basketball is such that it requires, deserves the kind of, I guess, footprint or whatever you and The Athletic will provide for it with a game story. Is that accurate? Will you write opinion about it or what?
Maybe we'll see what happens. You know, I'm going down there partially because I was like, this is a big game. You know, a ranked team coming to town. It's easy for me to get there. And if there's an upset, you know, it's kind of fascinating to me that in a history of these two teams playing, Gonzaga has never beat Oregon State, which is weird to think about on the men's side, but also like not like they've played each other recently. So we'll see if Wayne Tinkle and company can continue that streak.
Yeah. And what do you make so far, Lindsay, before we even get to some of the other national issues, which you're going to be covering thoroughly for The Athletic, and they impinge on the local stuff here at Oregon State. But have you seen enough of the Beavers this year? Have you seen enough of Gonzaga to have a feel for, hey, what is the shot, the chance that the Beavs at home tomorrow night can win this game?
Yeah, no, I definitely seen enough of both. I mean, Gonzaga has a lot of talent. I don't think that is, you know, any news to anyone. But it's interesting. I would be fascinated to hear your take on this, Mike. When I've watched Oregon State this year, it reminds me a little bit of the Elite Eight team, just in that I felt like a lot of that team's success was their willingness to be coached. And you could see when you watched games the way that players were interacting and listening to Wayne Tinkle and his staff as he was coaching them from the sideline and in timeouts. And they seemed like eager to accept that coaching, which is not always the case in this day and age. And so I'm curious to see like what that is and what their game plan is. You know, I think that one advantage to this whole new like landscape that we're in right now with college basketball is, you know, for years, it's like Dana Altman knows in a close game what Wayne Tinkle is going to call. He knows what they're going to go to. Like they know each other so well, but they don't have, Mark Few doesn't have that advantage over Tinkle mm-hmm. now. And also Tinkle doesn't have it over Few. Mm-hmm. But so I think that makes it more interesting. I'm curious to see, you know, what goes on in the paint, of course. Obviously, the Zags have Ryan and Ben Gregg, who's very talented. But, it's going to be a sellout. And I was just talking with someone the other day about, you know, Gil, I think, is unique in that, man, the fans are just right on top of you. And so that can make things rough for the visiting team.
It's true, except hasn't Gonzaga, under Few and their challenging, ambitious scheduling year in and year out, played everywhere? A lot of those neutral sites, not so much home and homes. I haven't studied it closely enough to know, but they really, given the cachet of their program, wouldn't really, even if Gil is rocking loud and different, they're not going to be intimidated by that, are they? Do you think Gil's a little different?
But it might be like hard to hear the play call.
Yeah.
I am curious, you know, when the Zags play at the University of Portland, it's practically a home game for them usually.
Right.
There's a lot of Gonzaga graduates who live in the Portland area. So I'm curious to see what the makeup is of the crowd tomorrow. Like, is it a sellout because Beaver fans are stepping up or because Gonzaga people came in and took all the tickets?
Yeah, I'm curious about that, too. There are still, just to clarify, there are still some tickets being sold, beavertickets.com, 1-800-GO-BEAVS, and I'm told that there's probably still a chance, even up to tip-off time at the walk-up window, you could still walk up and get tickets. But Lindsay, your point is well taken. It's moving towards a near-packed house at Gill, and we've seen special things happen on both the men's and women's side through the years in the building. I'm excited about whatever it is that unfolds. Before we leave off the Beavers and Gonzaga, Lindsay, I'm curious to know, you know, what your thoughts are about Gonzaga being part of a rebuilt Pac-12 where the Beavers and San Diego State, Boise State, Fresno State, et cetera, go forward now as a basketball conference. And just this is like the first look at a potential really good rivalry between the men's programs in the days ahead.
Yeah, 1,000%. I was talking with Trevor Kramer, the Oregon State Men's Basketball Sports Information Director, yesterday, and we were talking about how the Pac-12, the rebuilt Pac-12 is going to be one heck of a men's basketball conference, which is awesome. Everyone knows that my first love is women's basketball, and this, Mike, Gonzaga, Oregon State is all I have wanted for the last, like, decade on the women's side. So I am also thrilled that they will have to see each other regularly, even if the coaching staff are not thrilled about that, because they're both such good programs, you know. But I think that it could be really fun.
Yeah. Lindsay Schnell with The Athletic joining us. Lindsay, what do you make of – let's just use Mick Cronin as an example and his rather well-documented belly aching about many things in the last week to 10 days, including the travel that he and the other Big Ten schools have been subjected to. We all sort of knew that was inevitable and coming. What do you make of it?
Well, I did not see the whole rant, but I strongly agree with the part about people being delusional because, Mike, I talk to parents sometimes and I'm like, and they tell me about how my kid's going to go in the portal, you know, they deserve to make more money. And I'm like, what? Your kid shoots 15% from the 3-point line. What are we talking about? So I really agreed with that. In terms of, you know, all the complaining and the travel, I am curious to see about the toll that travel takes, like, long-term, or throughout the course of the season. We saw how problematic it was in football. But it's, to a degree, I don't feel sorry for someone making multiple million dollars a year. You know, this is all happening because people are greedy. And people want more money. That's why they split the conference up. So you reap what you sow. I feel bad for a lot of people, but not necessarily UCLA.
Yeah, I got you. Lindsey Schnell joining us on the Joe Beaver Show. I heard you yesterday, a very enjoyable conversation with John Canzano in the Great North yesterday. One of the things you talked about was a little bit about Oregon State women's basketball future. You touched a little bit on the nil component. Whatever it is, though, Lindsey, and if you have some thoughts on that, we'd love to hear about the future of the program and where it's going and so on. What Scott's up to this year, what he's up to this year, again, is a tremendous coaching job on he and the staff's part, the way this team's getting better and better.
You know, I think Michaela Pivick said it best one time when she and I were chatting. She was saying that anytime she hears criticism from anyone, like a fan, an opponent, a random person walking down the street who doesn't agree with some decision that Scott and his staff made during a game, she's like, they don't even understand the amount of prep that goes in, like the game plan that we have. And the bottom line is I'm always betting on him because he is such a good X's and O's coach. And he's a really good teacher of the game too. If you have those things, I actually wrote about this today and something that's going to come out tomorrow on The Athletic, because someone commented on how good the Utah State men have continued to be, even though they've had quite a bit of coaching turnover. And years ago, Scott told me, having success at smaller schools, which is to say schools that don't have as many resources, is often about understanding how to cover your team's weaknesses. And if you can do that at a small school, whether that's, you know, D2, D3, or a small D1, mid-major, you can win a lot of games. So then when you get somewhere where you have some resources, you really know what you're doing. And I think that's a big part of what he's doing. He took this completely rebuilt roster. Okay, what are our weaknesses? How do I hide them? And also, how do I force other teams to their weakness? You know, I always think about, there have been so many times over the last, I guess Scott's been there like 15 years now, which, Mike, I still think I'm pretty young, so that's hard for me to swallow. But where they play a team, and then afterward that team says, oh, yeah, you know, I didn't shoot well today, blah, blah, blah. Well, you're not shooting well because Oregon State is forcing you into shots you don't want to take. They're making you uncomfortable. It's always been his defensive philosophy. And so if you are in a game defensively, if you can play defense, you can stay in a game. And so you're always just hanging around. And then, you know, I joke with a few people about how Scott Ruick is going to die with 4 timeouts left. That man hates calling timeouts in the first, like, 38 minutes of a game. But I really see the benefit, because then he's in close games and he's got all these timeouts where he can call one, draw something up, and they can go out and execute it. They can always get a good shot. That was the other thing that Michaela Pivick said to me. She's like, every time we were in a close game, I felt so much confidence because I knew we were going to get a great look. It was all about if we could make it, but I knew we were going to be put in a position to succeed.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to keep doing that. And now with this junior college rule, my understanding is that both Kat and Tiara, 2 starting guards for Oregon State who are here for the first time this year, could get another year of eligibility because of this JUCO ruling. And that's awesome.
Like, yes.
When I watched both of them, I could see them succeeding under Scott, even if we were still in the Pac-12.
Mm-hmm. You know, Tiara was a guest of ours yesterday. She's been a guest a couple of times. I don't know if you've met her or interacted with her, but she's delightful and a really smart and good player that's only getting better. So I like sort of where this thing is going this year. And I just wonder, Lindsey, you've known Scott for a long time, not to age you. You're still young, but you've covered him a while. You've covered his teams at Fox and the national championship. A teacher, you say. First and foremost, Do you think he's still in that sense, no matter all the things that have happened under his watch at Oregon State and the gutting of the roster after last year's Elite Eight run and all of that? He still seems to be in a good place. He's a teacher. He's a coach. I feel like he's still a man who's contented somehow, even when things all around him are crazy and wild and unfair.
Mike, first of all, I don't think people understand how much Scott Ruick and his family love the Beavers. Mm-hmm. Way before he got the Oregon State job, he was a diehard. The women who played for him at George Fox have stories about they're on their team retreat in September doing some bonding activity, and Scott's like, hang on, we have to watch the fourth quarter of this Oregon State, this random Oregon State football game. Do you remember the kid from who played at David Douglas High School and then went to UCLA? Oa, I cannot say his last name. He was a defensive end.
Yes, yes. I can't say his name either. Ogwedeeksi or something like that. Yeah. Yes, yes.
Yeah, I'm not going to try to pronounce it or spell it. But I remember Scott was still coaching at George Fox when this happened. Oa was announcing his school choice. He had narrowed it down to three. It was UCLA, Oregon State, and I don't remember who else. And Scott's texting me. I was covering the announcement. And Scott's texting me like, do you think he's going to pick Oregon State? He's wearing an orange T-shirt. Because he was at his office in George Fox, like, watching the live stream. And I'm like, what is going on right now? Right. So he loves Oregon State. And if he were driven by championships, he could have left a long time ago. I mean, he's had multiple offers. People know what a good coach he is. There have been quite a few good openings around the country. But he loves OSU. His family is here. You know, his parents are at every single game. They drive down for every single game. His sister and brother-in-law are in Oregon City, come to a lot of games when his brother-in-law is a high school coach, when he's not coaching. And I think he takes a lot of pride in winning at a place that other people think is impossible to win at. So I think he is content. And I do think he does love teaching the game, and that's what you have to do. And he said, because I went up to there, Gonzaga, Oregon State, it's all I've wanted forever. Mm-hmm. I flew up to Spokane for that game just to watch. And he told me, like, you know, I really like this team. Like, they're fun to be around and they're hungry to learn. So I don't want to say he's a lifer because, like, crazy things can happen. But I would be shocked if he ever left, personally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Final thing, and that all the things you just, the attributes that you talked about, Scott, tomorrow night at Gill, we've got an event, and you're covering it. The Beavers in Gonzaga, we're expecting to sell out. But coming into town as a small-town guy, coaching Gonzaga, in Mark Few, his first appearance at Gill ever, as far as I know. You know,
that's crazy.
I know, but it is. I mean, the Beavers haven't played the Zag since 1992. So here comes Few.
But do you think he ever was there as a high schooler? Like when he was growing
it's
up?
Possible.
In the Eugene area?
It's possible. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I hope to maybe even talk to him briefly tomorrow before the game about some of these matters. We had his old high school coach, Doug Orton from Crestwell High School, on yesterday. But here is another guy in Few who over the years has been courted by everybody somewhere along the way. Less so now because he looks like a guy that has just pretty much said, you know, I like what I'm doing up here. And the job that he's done, Lindsay, when I think about 9 straight Sweet 16s, it's just ridiculously consistent and good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, such a good coach. It's so funny. I remember this story so well. The first time that Gonzaga was ranked number one in the AP poll, which this had to be more than 10 years ago, you know, when they were really breaking through from being a mid-major, someone showed up to his office to go talk to him, and Few had stuck a note on his door that said, "Gone fishing," because he loves the outdoors, and he really was out fishing that day. So I apologize for the rap music in the background. I'm standing outside right now.
It's okay.
So, I think he's such a good coach, right? And they've had so much consistency there. I mean, if you look at his bench, he has had some assistants there forever. Obviously, when Tommy Lloyd went to Arizona, like, that was a big loss for them. But he moves people up because he has grad assistants, like guys who come back. And I think the cool thing, too, is there's so many Gonzaga grads who, like, are done playing, because obviously they send a lot of guys to the pros, both NBA, G League, overseas. They come back and they're still around the program and they want to be there and they want to be supportive. I think that really speaks to what he and his staff have built. Great coach. He was an Olympic assistant this year,
right?
Like on a team, on a roster full of NBA coaches. Like, here's Mark Few.
Right.
So I think that there's no question how good he is.
Well, Lindsay, we are glad that your new world with the Athletic, congratulations on achieving that. I mean, that's a tremendous career milestone. We're glad you're coming to Gill tomorrow night. It'll be great to see you back in your old stomping grounds. Lindsay, thanks for the time as always. Congratulations. We'll see you soon.
All right. I'll see you tomorrow, Mike.
Thanks, Lindsay. Lindsay Schnell, our guest. We take a final break tomorrow. One of those players you mentioned, former player hanging around, Dan Dickow tomorrow, and Will Heck will join us for the first time ever on the Joe Beaver Show. Tomorrow, the new tight ends coach for the Beavs. That's tomorrow on the Joe Beaver Show. Angel even to become a free agent through the auspices of Greg Crawford.
Very nice.
Very nice of him.
Yeah.
Johnny, we head down the stretch of the show. And by the way, we were just referring to John and I were when the mics came back on, I saw the red light go on and we're in the middle. I still think there was a planned, we're going to show the spontaneity of Kornheiser and Wilbaum during commercial breaks where it was a weird thing. And I've still never, no one's ever explicated it. No one's ever, it's just, I've watched and thought during these, they'd go to commercial breaks during whatever that show is called. What is that show called? It's not Pardon the Interruption.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Wilbaum Kornheiser show through the years.
Yeah,
is that what that's called?
I think that's PTI.
Okay. Well, whatever the case, they'd go to commercial breaks and then occasionally during the break, shoot back to the studio showing Kornheiser and Wilbaum. You couldn't hear them, but just kind of moving their arms around and looking at each other and laughing or shuffling papers or whatever the case. The idea being, we're going to take you, we're taking you behind the scenes here. This is what these guys look like during commercial breaks. They're just doing the show, but the mics aren't on. Well, John and I were talking, not so much doing the show, but I was explaining to him or sharing something with him about one time a guy stayed off the air, put me on the air, namely our friend Greg Crawford. Said, Mike, Danny Ainge, we can get Ainge, but Ainge wants to talk to you about this. And so it was kind of this way back in 92 when Ainge announced his free agents can't and that he wasn't going to re-sign with the Blazers. He was going to hit the free agent market, and he did it. On The Fan. He did it on KFXX, and Greg gave up his own airtime to allow me to do that interview on
Very
the
nice.
Show. Very nice of him. Very nice in that sense. I don't even remember why we were talking about that per se. Oh, we were talking about Brian Wheeler. And the, are we down to 10 seconds on
yeah.
The Fan?
Yeah.
Okay. The Wheel Celebration. Now, tomorrow, Dan Dickow and Will Heck. Thanks for joining us today.